look at the first 22 verses. For time's sake, we'll read the first six. After these things, Jesus showed himself again to the disciples at the Sea of Tiberias, and on this wise showed he himself, or in this manner. There were together Simon Peter and Thomas, called Didymus, and Nathanael of Cana in Galilee, and the sons of Zebedee, which would be James and John, and two other of his disciples. Simon Peter said unto them, those mentioned in verse 2, I go a-fishing. They say unto him, we also go with thee. They went forth and entered into a ship immediately, and that night they caught nothing. When the morning was now come, Jesus stood on the shore, but the disciples knew not that it was Jesus. Then Jesus said unto them, children, have ye any meat? They answered him, no. And he said unto them, cast the net on the right side of the ship, and ye shall find. They cast, therefore, and now they were not able to draw it for the multitude of fishes. This is the third post-resurrection appearance of Christ to the apostles as a group. We see in verse 14, this is now the third time that Jesus showed himself to his disciples after he was risen from the dead. The first appearance to the apostles was the same day of the resurrection in the evening, in John chapter 20, verses 19 through 25. And the second, of course, was a week later in John chapter 20, verses 26 through 29. Now, he appeared to others during that, in between those times, but this was the third time he appeared to the apostles. Now, in the first appearance to the apostles, that we know that they were in a state of intimidation, they were in a state of fear, there was much confusion and panic and distress. And of course, Jesus changed all of that when he appeared and spoke to them and blessed them. And then in the second appearance, of course, Thomas is filled with unbelief, and Jesus, of course, changed that as well. And in this third appearance, we see in verse 3, Simon Peter saith unto them, that is the other apostles that are mentioned there in verse 2, I go a-fishing. Now, that, of course, was his occupation before the Lord called him. And all of this, of course, follows the three denials of the Lord that Peter was guilty of. And I believe at this time Peter saw nothing better than to return to his old occupation. And the purpose of this third appearance was for Peter's sake. And it was part of Christ dealing personally with Peter. It was part of his restoration, part of his call to future service, but mainly this was for Peter, just like the second appearance mainly was for Thomas. So he's dealing with Peter, restoring Peter. However, that's not the intent of our message tonight. In the first two appearances, again, Jesus makes a difference in their lives. And so it is here as well. In verse 3, they are fishing, and we read at the end of that verse that they caught nothing. No doubt they were probably tired, perhaps frustrated, perhaps disappointed, perhaps discouraged, but they caught nothing. And those words stick out to us. They caught nothing. It was a time of nothing. But then we read in verse 4, but So something's going to change. But when the morning was now come, and it was this morning that everything would change. We see they go from they caught nothing to verse 6, where they were not able to draw it, that is the net, for the multitude of fishes. So they went from nothing to an abundance. And again, as we read this, we have to remember this was the morning. Everything takes place here in the morning. But now they have this multitude of fishes. So the night before was a time of nothing, and now they have a very bountiful day. Not just in the fact that they caught fishes, but this was a spiritually bountiful day. They had a spiritually plentiful day. Again, so as we look at these verses, first 22 verses, we need to remember it takes place in the morning, beginning of the day. And there are some very, very valuable principles for you and I concerning how we can have a spiritually bountiful day, or what leads to a spiritually bountiful day. The truth is, our worst days are days of spiritual nothing. Those are our worst days. You may have a great time, you may enjoy the day, but I'm telling you, your worst days are spiritually nothing days. Those days are worse than days of sickness, days of trial and tribulation. And a day of spiritual nothingness, you may not think much upon it that particular day, but you may pay for it the next day, or you may pay for it the next day, or a month from now. But I assure you, it's your worst day. Days where there is spiritually nothing. But I believe that our days as a child of God do not have to be spiritually barren days. At the end of a day, we should be able to point to spiritual blessings. It would be great if every day was a spiritual, bountiful day. And again, there's some principles here that we need to get a hold of. What makes a spiritual, bountiful day possible is what we read there in verse 4. Jesus stood on the shore. In verse 1, Jesus showed himself. That's what makes it possible. Jesus Christ. You remove Jesus Christ from this account, and you have nothing. You have nothing. There's nothing there. Once you take Jesus Christ out of the picture, you have the apostles, they're fishing, and they caught nothing. And that's basically all you have when you remove Christ from the scene. Of course, I believe that every day Jesus is there, and therefore every day can be a spiritually bountiful day. And what a wonderful life when you live one day after the next and you abound spiritually each day. And what a horrible life to live day after day of spiritual nothing. So we want to, again, remember that what transpired here transpired at the beginning of the day. And we want to see some lessons concerning how to begin a spiritually bountiful day. Notice in verse 3, they caught nothing. We need to begin every day realizing that the day is beyond our knowledge, beyond our effort, beyond our skill. These disciples were fishing that night. They knew those waters. They knew how to fish. They knew when to fish. They knew where to fish. They were skilled fishermen. They did not lack effort. They weren't just sitting in the boat. They put forth effort to catch fish. But at the end of the, as they fished through the night, we read again in verse 3, they caught nothing. Christ is standing on the shore. He knows what they've been doing through the night. He knows everything that's transpired that night. He knows that they have not caught anything. But he asks them a question in verse 5. He says, "Have ye any meat?" He is basically asking them, "Have you caught anything?" And he's not asking that question for information's sake. He never asks a question for information's sake. He already knows. But he's asking that question to bring home a point to them. And they answered, of course, no. We haven't caught anything. We have nothing. We have no meat. The point is to drive home their futility, their ineffectiveness, their emptiness. The Lord is driving home that point. They must realize we have caught nothing. They realize that. The Lord wanted to hear them say it. We have caught nothing. And we need to begin each day being reminded of the truth that Jesus taught in John 15, verses 4 and 5, that we are the branches, and if we're going to abide, if we're going to have fruit, we must abide in Him. Without me, ye can do nothing. And these are truths that we must not lose sight of. Without Him, we can do nothing. Again, without Him, nothing good happens here in John chapter 21. Without Him, they simply catch nothing. So this is a truth that we must get a hold of every day. If we're going to have a spiritually bountiful day, we must realize that without Him, it's not going to happen. Without Him, I am not going to have a spiritually bountiful day. Without Him, I can do nothing. And the failure to realize this truth, the failure to practice this truth, has resulted in many a spiritual barren day. Secondly, notice verse 6, we need to begin the day listening to and following the Lord's instructions. So they have said in verse 5, no, we haven't caught anything. In verse 6, he said unto them, cast the net on the right side of the ship. And he gives them a promise. And ye shall find. So he's telling them what to do. If we're going to have a spiritually bountiful day, we have to listen to what the Lord says. We have to listen to and we have to follow the direction of the Lord. No matter how much knowledge you may have, no matter how much skill you may have, no matter how much effort you may put forth, the Lord is in control. And He knows what you need. He knows what you need to have a spiritually abundant day. He knows exactly what we need. He knows exactly what each one of us need for a spiritually bountiful day. Now, the Lord's instruction was very plain. Cast your net on the right side of the ship. Very plain directions. Very straightforward. Very easily understood. The right side of the ship. Do you mean this side? I mean the right side of the ship. Not the front, not the back. No, I mean the right side of the ship. So the direction is very plain. The direction is very easily comprehended. Most of God's instruction is very plain. Most of God's instruction is very easily comprehended. You may not understand the why of it, but it is very straightforward. I'm sure that these apostles had already cast their net on the right side of the ship. I'm sure they cast on the right side, the left side. But he says, cast it on the right side. And again, the Lord has instruction to direct our path. And that instruction will make a difference, believe it or not. It will make a difference in your day. To listen to God's instruction will make a difference in our day. So we need to seek God's direction at the beginning of the day. We see it was morning. They weren't seeking God's direction here, but there's a principle here. We need to seek God's direction at the beginning of the day. You don't wade into the day, get yourself in a position where you don't know what to do, and then ask direction. Your day will just be much easier if you begin the day asking for God's instruction. And failure here has, again, resulted in many a spiritual barren day. Many have spiritual nothing in a day because they did not listen to God's instruction. So we see there's the hearing of God's instruction. Thirdly, there is the obeying of the instruction of the Lord. Following the instruction of God in verse 6, we read, they cast therefore. The therefore simply is because he told them to. That's the only reason we need. There's no other reason. He said, cast the net on the right side of the ship. So we are to cast the net on the right side of the ship. Tomorrow he may say, cast the net on the left side of the ship. You can't assume. Well, yesterday he told me to cast it on the right side of the ship, so today I'll do the same thing. You can't assume that. Tomorrow he may tell you to cast it on the left side. You may cast it on the right side tomorrow, thinking, well, I caught fish there yesterday. You'll go home with nothing. You have to follow the Lord's instruction. And so they cast, therefore. Without asking any questions, without any hesitation, without any attempt to alter the Lord's instruction, without any attempt to interpret the Lord's instruction. Without any opinions, they cast therefore. They simply did what the Lord said. This is the same advice that Mary gave to the servants at the marriage feast. In John 2 in verse 5, she said, whatsoever he saith unto you, do it. That's good advice. That is good advice. Whatsoever he says to you, do it. Don't worry about anyone else. Whatsoever he says unto you, do it. And the result of this unquestioning obedience, we see in our text in verse 6. And now, after obeying God, now they were not able to draw it for the multitude of fishes. So the difference here between nothing and a full net was the width of a boat, and more importantly, obeying what God said. That was the difference. And that makes a big difference in any day. Just simply obeying what God says. So we see there's abundance to be had just simply following the Lord's instruction. Doesn't do us any good to hear God's instruction and then go and do it our way. that'll lead to a spiritually barren day. But failure here, failure to follow God's instruction, again, has led to many, many, many a spiritual barren day, a day of spiritual nothing. So we see that they've heard the voice of God. We see that they've followed the instruction of God. And then we have to recognize the Lord. Verse 7, after they received this instruction, therefore, the disciple whom Jesus loved, which would be John, saith unto Peter, it is the Lord. It is the Lord. Now, they were some distance from the shore. Perhaps all they could see was a figure. But they knew that voice. And John could tell, it is the Lord. So it's in the morning, and there is a recognition of the Lord. Every morning, we have to recognize the Lord. You can't just start your day, not give any thought whatsoever to the Lord, and expect to have a spiritually bountiful day. Oh, you may have a fun day, and you may have a day where you get a lot accomplished, but it's still not a good day. A good day is a spiritually bountiful day. So in all of our designs, and all of our aims, and all of our intentions, and all of our actions, and all of our circumstances, it's important that we realize it doesn't depend upon me. It's important that I realize I must listen for God's instruction. I must obey God's instruction. And I must have some recognition of the Lord. Because those words, it is the Lord, it is the Lord, that changed the entire mood on that boat. Changed everything. It is the Lord. Once you recognize the Lord, perspective changes. Moods change. Spirit changes. Attitudes change. Everything changes when there is a recognition of the Lord. And again, it's a failure here in recognizing the Lord, recognizing the presence of God that has again resulted in many a spiritual barren day. Now, recognizing God, that brings us to point number 5. There is a seeking to be near Him. Notice in verse 7, therefore the disciple whom Jesus loved said unto Peter, it is the Lord. Now when Simon Peter heard that, it was the Lord, he girt his fisher's coat unto him, for he was naked, and did cast himself into the sea. And the other disciples came in a little ship, for they were not far from land, but as it were 200 cubits, about 100 yards, dragging the net with fishes. So it was this personal recognition of the Lord. Immediately, Peter has a desire to be near Him. Immediately, Peter has the desire to be where the Lord is. If the Lord is on the shore, 100 yards away, then I don't want to be out here, I want to be there. That's Peter's attitude. That's also the attitude of the other disciples as well. But Peter jumps out of the boat. With such desire, he begins to move in the direction of Christ. How do we know that we have recognized God? How do we know that we have acknowledged God's presence? Because when we do, we will move in the direction of Christ. Recognizing Christ, Peter immediately has a heart for Him. I have to be where He is. And immediately Jesus Christ is a priority to Peter. The fish that they've just caught is no longer means anything to Peter. Jesus Christ is his priority. Jesus Christ is his goal. Jesus Christ is his aim. And Jesus Christ is now the direction of his life. So we see upon recognizing the presence of Christ, this brings a certain order to one's life. This brings a certain purpose in one's life. And now Christ is the priority of that very moment. And again, that needs to be so every day. And failure here, again, has resulted in many a spiritual barren day. Because folks do not recognize the presence of Christ. They neglect Jesus Christ. And that's going to lead to a spiritually barren day. Then notice in verse 9, sixthly, we must realize that the Lord, every single day, intentionally prepares for us what we need. Every single day. It's there. Verse 9, as soon as they were come to land, they saw a fire of coals there, and fish laid thereon, and bread. While they were perhaps coming to the shore, the Lord has everything ready for when they get there. Jesus, with great love and with purpose, and for them, built that fire. He would provide, that fire would provide them with warmth. That fire would provide them with the comfort that they needed. He also provided fish and bread. Not their fish and bread. Those haven't been dragged to the shore yet. He provided fish and bread. Everything that would suffice them for that moment. And realize that every single day, God has already prepared everything that you need. Everything that will suffice you for that day, He's already prepared. What a wonderful way to look at a day. When you get up in the morning and you start your day and you just know, God not only knows what I'm going to experience today, God has especially prepared for me what I need today. Because let me tell you, He's the only one who really knows what you need today. Because He's the only one that knows what's going to happen. So he knows, and He makes preparation. He knew when they were out fishing that night that they're going to need fire. They're going to be hungry. And He provided all of this. So, again, if we fail to recognize this fact that God has prepared everything I need, if we don't recognize that, you know what we do? We go looking somewhere else for what we need. After all, we've got to survive. So we're going to do something to suffice our needs. And we'll go other places to have those needs met. But no one can meet our needs like the Lord. So when we fail to recognize God has already prepared for me what I need today, then we begin to look elsewhere. And that will lead to a spiritually barren day. It may not only lead to a spiritually barren day, it can make you sick also. And you can get lost and you can wander around. You can really get off course looking somewhere else when you don't have to. There isn't a child of God that has to look anywhere but the Lord. Now we do. We're like sheep. And we will wander. But we don't have to. But that's what we do. Sixthly, notice verse 12 in verse 13. In the meantime, we see that the Lord tells them to go and bring of the fish which they have caught. And I find it interesting that Simon Peter, just says that he did it, doesn't say the others. Remember, they struggled bringing that net with the fishes, and then Simon Peter went up and drew the net to land full of great fishes. He had a burst of energy. He had a burst of abnormal strength. But in verse 12 and 13, Jesus said unto them, "Come and dine. Come and dine." And none of the disciples durst ask him, "Who art thou?" knowing that it was the Lord. Jesus then cometh and taketh bread and giveth them, and fish likewise. So the Lord's prepared the fire. He's prepared the fish. He's prepared the bread. The table is prepared just for them. And then the Lord says, "Come and dine." Again, every day, God prepares what we need. And I believe if we listen, we will hear the Lord every day saying, "Come." That's an invitation to draw near. Come and dine. Not just talking about a snack here. Come and dine. This is an invitation to partake of God's provision. When we partake of God's provision, we are going to have a spiritually bountiful day. This is an invitation to take of God's spiritual plentifulness. And God's provision is one of plenty. Come and dine. It is an invitation to partake of God's refreshment. It would be that which would refresh them, to partake of God's substance. But the fact, again, he doesn't say, "Go and dine." He says, "Come and dine." So it is an invitation to fellowship with him. Again, failure here. Failure to dine with the Lord has resulted in many a spiritually barren day, and has resulted in many drinking out of the muddy rivers, and again getting spiritually sick. You will not get sick. I'm not talking about physically now, but you will not get spiritually sick dining with the Lord. It's not going to happen. It's just not going to happen. There will be spiritual health. So if we want a spiritually bountiful day, we need to dine with the Lord. Eighthly, verses 15 through 17, we're all familiar with these verses. We read, "So when they had dined," so they've finished, they've been sufficed, Jesus then begins to deal with Peter. And he asked him a question. "Lovest thou me?" He ended up asking that question three times. Again, he's dealing with Peter's sin, but that's not the point of the message. "Lovest thou me?" Three times. Three times, Peter said, "Thou knowest that I love thee. Thou knowest that I love thee." In that phrase, just think of the last three words. "I love thee." Three times, Peter said to the Lord, "I love thee." If we want to have a spiritually bountiful day, we need to reaffirm our love for him throughout the day. We need to tell the Lord, "Lord, I love you. Lord, I love you." That will result in a spiritually bountiful day. When the Lord asked Peter, "Lovest thou me?" he's bringing Peter to the point to examine his love for the Lord. And love for the Lord needs to be examined. It needs to be examined often. And the reason is because it is very possible, because of our nature, because of the world in which we live. It's very possible for our love to grow cold. It's very possible for our love to become stagnant. It's very possible for our love to become mechanical, routine. It's possible that it lose its glow and fervency and passion. So we need to constantly examine our love. And we need to constantly reaffirm, I love thee. I love thee. That needs to be every single day. Does not hurt anyone to tell their spouse, to tell their children, their family, those they love, I love you. That doesn't hurt anyone. That's a good thing. But if we can do that with others, how much more we ought to stop and tell the Lord? You say, well, He knows. Yes, He does. And that's the same attitude people take with their spouse. Well, they know I love them. I don't have to tell them. Well, yeah, you really do. You really do. Not that they'll know, but it just there's a benefit. There's a benefit there. So every day we need to express our love. And then ninthly, we need to realize that we have a service to fulfill every single day. In verses 15 through 17, the Lord says to Peter, feed my lambs, feed my sheep, feed my sheep. He is telling Peter what his future service would involve. He's telling Peter what he would have him to do. Now, our service is to be fulfilled out of love for him. That's why it's in the context here of, lovest thou me? I love thee. Then feed my lambs, feed my sheep, feed my sheep. In other words, if you love me, then do this service in my behalf or for me. So we are to realize we all have this service. We have something that God has called us to do. And realizing that, we must also realize that everything else is subservient to the service that God has called us to. You don't fit in God's service around everything else. God's service takes priority and everything else is to fit in. We get it backwards. So we have this service and everything is subservient to that service. And failure here again has resulted in many a spiritual barren day. And then lastly, we need to make the Lord our focus. Notice verse 19. Then spake he, signifying by what death he should glorify God. He told Peter how he would die, basically. And when he had spoken this, he said unto him, follow me. That is, Peter, focus upon me. You can't follow someone unless you're paying attention, unless your focus is upon them. So this is the instruction, follow me. That is God's, in a simplistic way, that is God's instruction to every one of us every single day, follow me. Now that may involve many, many, many other things, but that pretty much sums up everything. Follow me. Peter, just like you and I, didn't take long for Peter to shift his focus. The Lord says, follow me. And Peter almost immediately shifts his focus to John. Notice verse 20. Then Peter, turning about, seeth the disciple whom Jesus loved, following, which also leaned on his breast at supper, and said, Lord, which is he that betrayeth thee? Peter, seeing him, saith to Jesus, Lord, and what shall this man do? You see, he's lost his focus already. How many times we've had spiritually barren days because we get our eyes on what shall this man do? What about him? What about her? And we end up having a spiritually barren day. But notice what the Lord did. Jesus said unto him, verse 22, if I will that he tarry till I come, if I will that he does nothing, what's that to thee? Peter, if I don't want John to do anything, that's really none of your business. You don't worry about John. And then again, he said, follow thou me. He's redirected his focus. And again, failure to focus upon God has resulted in many a spiritually barren day. Just a failure to focus. We have to realize about ourselves that we are very easily distracted, that our focus is very easily shifted from the Lord to the things of the world. And we have to constantly be here. And I believe the Lord's always saying it. Going, pay attention. Follow me. Follow me. You know how many times in an hour the Lord probably has to follow me. Follow me. Pay attention. It's just over and over and over. But thank the Lord. He doesn't give up on us. He just keeps instructing us to focus upon Him. So how many of God's people live their days in a state of fear or state of confusion or distress or defeat? It doesn't have to be that way. We can have spiritually bountiful days. And we all know by experience we're going to have some spiritual nothing days. It's going to happen. Why? Because we're sinners. Because we fail. So let's say we have a spiritually barren day. Remember again, verse 3, they caught nothing. They caught nothing. But then we read in verse 4, but when the morning was now come, new day. New day. What does that mean? That means there's a new opportunity. A new opportunity for a spiritually bountiful day. If we have a spiritually barren day, the worst thing you can do is drag that day into the next day. That's the worst thing you can do. And before you know it, you'll have a spiritually barren week. And before you know it, a month. And on and on and on it goes. But we have to realize when the morning comes, we just start all over. It's the same thing, vice versa. You can't carry over. Well, I had a spiritually bountiful day today. I'll just carry that over into tomorrow. It doesn't work that way. You try to do that, you'll have a spiritually barren day the next day. But when the morning was come, every day we ought to thank God for a new day. It is God, every new day is a testimony of God's mercy. It's a testimony of God's grace. It's a testimony of God's long-suffering. And it's saying, I'm giving you another opportunity. I've given you another opportunity. So how we ought to thank God for each and every day. And we do pray that each one would have spiritually bountiful days. That's a good day. A spiritually bountiful day. is a wonderful, wonderful day. It could be a bad day as far as humans would look at it, but if it was spiritually bountiful, that's a good day. That's a good day. And if it was a day of you thought was a good day but wasn't spiritually bountiful, that's not a good day. That's not a good day. But don't carry that bad day into the next day. But realize that you have a new opportunity to have a spiritually bountiful day. I mean, it just doesn't get any better to live our lives day after day, having spiritually bountiful days, and then one day waking up in glory. I mean, it just keeps getting better and better and better. And that's how it ought to be. Each day ought to be getting better for us spiritually. And then, of course, it won't be long, and everything will truly be better. Brother Tim, if you'd come and